let's just kick it off right away and just introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what we're going to talk about today. Well,
thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And, yep, I'm Colin Wilhelm. I'm a Democratic candidate for Congress out here in Colorado's 3rd Congressional District, which is all of western and southern Colorado, essentially. And so I'm doing that, and I'm getting out and talking to people and meeting people. And I really wanted to sit down and talk about mental health and addiction. Mm-hmm. It's one of the major parts of my campaign. It's one of my it's what I call my baby issue. It's what I believe in. It's what I think we need to work on as a country. It affects every aspect of our society, economically, criminal justice, societal, everything from top to bottom. If we address it more and work together to address some of the issues revolving around it, we can improve our society as a whole. So I want to talk about that and tell you guys my story a little bit for those that don't know some of my history with addiction and mental health and go through there.
Well, we want to hear about your story. I think also when we talk about addiction, it affects an entire community.
Yes.
So the person, of course, we have the addict, the person that's struggling, the criminal justice, you know, people mm-hmm. that are getting in trouble related to this. We have families. We have social networks. We have friends, teachers.
Yeah.
We have church members. We have group members, we have neighbors. I mean, it goes on and on that everyone's affected.
Yeah. One in three Americans is, we use the word touched. Mm. One in three Americans is touched by addiction, either themselves, their family, their friends, somebody in school, through their job, through their work. Yeah. And it knows no societal bounds. It knows no racial bounds. It knows no gender bounds. It affects everybody from presidents and Congress people around the world to the people that are homeless, to veterans especially. And there's no leaps and bounds. And one of the best ways to describe that is there's an AA group for sitting Congress people, and they meet together as sitting Congress people, and nobody knows who attends those meetings. It's the most confidential caucus in Congress. So that just shows you how broad of an effect it can have on the society.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's alone and powerful, just thinking about that small little structure that's overseeing a great deal of people.
Yeah, and that would be, as a recovering alcoholic myself, some group that I hope to join and work with when I if I have the luxury of representing the 3rd Congressional District.
So. Which we are fully supporting right now at this very moment. And So I want to hear about a little bit about you as a person. Who are you? Like, where did you grow up? How did you get to where you are now?
So I grew up in Metro Detroit, Michigan, and to a criminal defense father and a mother who was in hospital administration. Mm. I have one sister and had a great lower middle class life, loving parents, always there, always present. My father worked for his own himself, so he made it a present to be at all of our games. And I say present because it was literally a gift that he was giving to us, to be at all of games, our recitals, all of those things. And he was very loving and worked throughout all of our schoolwork. But he was also very much, you have to go to school and you have to do this and you have to work very hard and you have to give back to your community. So I think a lot of those values instilled in my life. And we weren't a super Christian religious family. We did go to church more so on the main holidays, as a lot of Americans do. My parents actually met at the University of Notre Dame. And my father was a theology major, which might be one of the reasons that we weren't huge into organized religion, mm-hmm. but very much faith and spirituality played a part in our household. Mm-hmm. And it was very much of the works and community aspect. And I think that's what's led me down this path of trying to give back to the community. And from growing up, I went to Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I majored in political science, communication, and what I learned is beer drinking. Mm-hmm. And that'll play a little bit of a role in a second. And then from there, I decided to go to law school, went to New England School of Law in Boston, which is the very first law school in the country, not when I was there, but back in the 1920s, to admit women.
Wow.
Yeah. So wow. That's its claim to fame there.
Yeah.
And then from there, I met my wife, Erin, and moved out here. And now I do criminal defense law, and I focus my practice on people that are charged with addiction crimes and help them navigate the DUI system or the theft charges. And hopefully when they're willing to and they want to get some treatment and some help that they need to go forward. And I do that because, as I've said, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I have 2.5 years of sobriety now. It was a time in my life when I realized that I was struggling with it for a while. I wasn't. There's different levels of struggling. And, you know, I was at my rock bottom. Many people have a much deeper rock bottom than I did. I was lucky, as some people would call it. I was the yet. I hadn't had things happen to me yet, but I was eligible for those too. So that was kind of where I was. But that was my rock bottom for me. It was enough for me to wake up on New Year's Day of 2019 and tell my wife that I wasn't going to drink. And I was not able to not drink that day. So later that day, I was on the phone, and she dropped me off at rehab the next day.
So you sparked it.
Yes.
It came from something. It wasn't your wife saying, you know, I noticed you got a problem here. This was something that came within and you were ready.
You know, there had been conversations, mm-hmm. but it wasn't, she didn't drive me to find the rehab center, and by drive me, I mean push me.
Yeah.
She didn't find it for me. She didn't do any of that. She was supportive in my efforts during the years before,
okay.
to get sober and work through it, or to limit my drinking, or right. some of the things that people do, and do sober Januaries or those events to try to prove to themselves that they don't have a problem. Many people who do those are successful and they don't have a problem.
Right.
I was not, and I ended up going to a rehab center in Steamboat Springs called the Foundry.
Foundry, okay.
The Foundry, and it's a 12-person. When I was there, it was a 12-person all-male.
Okay.
And it's the only male inpatient facility for 30-day to 60-day facility.
Okay.
On the Western Slope.
The only one?
Yes.
And there's only 12?
At the time, yes. I don't wow. know if there's more now.
Is there like a giant waiting list, or mm-hmm. how do you get in? Like, do you get referred by a doctor? How do they decide?
So I was being a criminal defense attorney, I had heard of Jay Walker Lodge in Carbondale, mm-hmm. which is a great organization, and they do a lot. I actually called over to Jay Walker's, and they put me in touch with their director of admissions. And I wasn't eligible to go to Jay Walker's. Because I needed, they wanted me. They're a situation where they do the second and third times around to try to help you.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, and so this was my first attempt.
This was the initial treatment.
Yep, and okay. so they put me in touch with the Foundry, and I got lucky. They had a bed available. I called over, and then I was lucky. I had insurance, and the insurance was able to pay for it. And so I was able to go there. But I still had to pay my out-of-pocket deductible. Yeah. Remember, this is January 2nd.
Yes.
So
you have a full deductible to meet.
Yes. And so we had a large bill that we had to figure out how to pay.
Yeah.
And we eventually, I think we've paid that off.
Do they work with payment plans and things like that?
They
to
will.
Accommodate?
Yeah.
Because I think that's important when somebody's in their critical stage and ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
That hopefully that we can do something like that to get people to go.
Yeah, the thing about treatment is you have to get the person when they're willing.
Yeah.
It can't be their family's willing, or they're going to do it for somebody else, or they want to do it for their kids or their wife or their mother or their father.
They have to do it for themselves.
Yeah.
Do you feel like an intervention is pressuring somebody to do something when they're not ready, or do you feel like an intervention is an effective tool to let people know that
my answer
they
to that would be
it.
Yes.
It's pressure.
It can be both. So it can be a pressure, but if it's done at the right stage,
right.
it could put that bug in their ear. And maybe it won't be that day.
Right.
But an intervention that's done that doesn't take them directly to a treatment facility or to an AA meeting, I think would be is more effective than one that
that you're getting in the car and you're going right
that
there.
Doesn't, that won't
it
work.
Feels like peer pressure in a way that it's like that person's probably set up for a relapse.
They are, and they'll probably get dried out or detoxed, and then they might check themselves right out themselves, and that ends worse for them because if some of these treatment centers, as I mentioned, take insurance, but if you leave early, you're leaving against medical advice.
So then you're paying the full bill.
Full bill. And most of these places, they're not cheap.
No.
No.
I don't really know if you were paying out of pocket cash for...
The place I was at was $1,000 a day.
A day.
A day.
So when you're in there, is it like all day long of different mm-hmm. types of like one-on-ones or groups or
Yeah, you're doing time? 12 to 14 hours of work a day. Now, there are part of that work is physical activity, too.
Oh, that's important.
So you're doing yoga or CrossFit or there's open gyms. There's downtime for you to read and do those things. But you're at least doing 8 to 9 hours of class or one-on-one sessions. And then you're also doing those other hours and working together. And the good ones will take you to an AA meeting or an NA meeting. They'll have you do some charity work, give back. You also get to spend some time outside. And there's there is some good downtime where you bond with the people that you're going through this.
Yeah.
And that is very important, too. The people that you're there with make your... It's just like in college. You're only as good as what you put into it.
Right.
But you're also only as good as the people that you surround yourself with. But unlike in college, you get to pick and choose your friends.
Right.
Here, you're there with the people that are there.
So it forces you to work with a variety of type of personalities and not
mm-hmm. –
that's intense work right there is just not reacting to certain situations.
Yep. And everybody has been to a different level of their life and a different level of areas in their addiction. And it's important to recognize that the drug of choice – by the time you're getting to that level where you want help and you're at that level, isn't as important as the fact that you are addicted to a substance. It all becomes an addiction. Right. The drug of choice, from heroin to opioids to alcohol to crack, you name it. It doesn't. It's allowed you to do different things, but it doesn't. It doesn't make it any easier to recover from alcoholism than it does from opioids or anything like that.
Still an addiction.
Yes.
Yeah. So you have a variety, but yet you're still working for the same goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's something that you come across very quickly in understanding people. And the guys that I was with, I was lucky, were phenomenal. We had a great connection and relationship, and that helped a lot.
Helped you get through what you were going through. So then you're working through this, and then the day comes where you're like, okay, now it's time for you to you're finished with this course.
Yep.
Then you got to go home.
Yes.
So that's the work that you learned that you got to keep going.
Yeah.
So how did you find like your support group from home?
I was very lucky. My friends that I had before are the same friends that I have now. My wife was very supportive and is still very supportive. I couldn't do this without her. I'm not doing it for her, but I couldn't do it without her. My friends are all supportive. And because of that, I don't mind them drinking around me, and they don't try to hide it from me, and they don't treat me any differently than they did before. And I think that's super important. But also, you have to ingrain yourself into the AA or the NA meetings or those or other types of support systems that you can find out there. If AA isn't the way for you, maybe it's your church or any other types of sober foundations around there. Many people, when they leave those inpatient settings, will be lucky enough to go to sober living, where they'll be in an apartment with a couple other people who are sober, going through those same struggles and generally going to meetings together and making friendships and getting together and maintaining their sobriety together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very important. And many treatment centers have those, so it's like a step down level that you can do.
So it's a step down, so you're kind of not thrown out there. You're kind of gonna get integrated back into whatever life that is that you're gonna create from there.
Yes,
and you're lucky with the same friends, because I think that could go either way. Mm-hmm. I think for the most part, if you have really good friends, that's probably going to be a great outcome. But I think if you're hanging out with friends that are encouraging you to use a substance, that just be mindful of who you're spending time with.
Yeah, one of the things that they'll do at my center and some other good ones that I know, they'll go through your phone with you and they'll delete contacts. And that helps, because then you're not – you don't even have that contact number in your phone. That doesn't prevent that person from contacting you, but it saves you that just one instance of anxiety if you see their phone number. Maybe it's your dealer or somebody, friends that you've been using a lot with, or, you know, that sort of thing. And it helps.
I think that would help. I think what I learned in just my little story, how we connect, Colin and I, is my son had passed away of an overdose, and his drug of choice was, and this was in 2018, but his drug of choice was heroin. Mm-hmm. And when, after he passed and I'm going through his stuff, he had like four phones.
Yes.
And what happened after I have a lot of great connections with his friends, and those friends weren't heroin users, but they could kind of give me a glimpse of who Kane was in a different light and help me understand some of these things. But he was trying to get away from those dealers, so he kept getting a different phone number. But his struggle was so strong that they chased him down.
Yes.
I just was mind blown. He was trying to not have them contact him, and they just kept stalking. They almost stalked him. And it made it really hard for him to try to be free of it. And we had him living with family and different people, so they didn't know where those family members lived. And that kind of is really horrible to think about.
It is. And, you know, people who are suffering from addiction at that stage that he was at, or that are going into an inpatient treatment center, are in some of the most vulnerable states.
Yeah.
And it's very easy for them to be preyed upon by those types of people.
Yeah.
But it's also very easy for them to be preyed upon by people who want to help them. And that is a major, or claim they want to help them, I should say.
Mm. So it could go.
Yes.
Yeah, when you're at your most vulnerable state, probably in your life, and you could, all these people could be trying to take advantage of you.
Very much so.
Or in many ways, not just the dealers or not just those people that want to use with you, but it could be people that are like, oh, we could get their money.
Yes, there's a whole addiction treatment, and I'll use treatment in this sentence in quotes, economy based on getting insurance money and not actually helping the person, and then getting Medicaid money and not actually helping the person.
And that's like, I don't think people even talk about this or are even aware of it, but I'd like to hear how these treatment facilities are actually regulated, and is the government have anything to do with these regulations?
So that's a great question. And so first we should state that these treatment centers need to be regulated.
Yeah.
And you need to have regulations for the employees, make sure you're hiring the right people and have certified people working there. And when I say certified, meaning they have their addiction treatment cards or their mental health facility and practitioner cards, and are good, caring people too. That's on the
state. So they should have some certificate at some level. Okay.
Yep. But then also you need to make sure that you're regulating the people that are coming in and how they're coming in, that you're regulating treatment of these people. I know there isn't one way to make sure that everybody has equal treatment in the medical field. That's hard to do because there's so many different types of treatment. But we have to use that evidence-based style of treatment.
Right.
And so we do that. And so currently, only 35 states require some form of regulation over inpatient treatment facilities.
Wow.
And there is no national standard. Some states, the regulation is as little as their HR policies and their hiring policies, and that's it.
That is it.
Yes. Now, in Colorado, we're very, very lucky. We have some of the most strictest regulations in the country on who can work there, what types of certificates they need, how you go about making sure you're finding patients. You can't go out and like attract or advertise to them and try to pull them in from a hospital inpatient or from a detox or anything like that.
Okay.
Now you can work with detox centers and hospitals and get the patients that way.
Mm-hmm.
If the patient's willing to go, but you can't
instigate it. The patient instigates it.
Yes.
So is there like a list or like how, if you were like a person helping your family member or a friend, and like, how do you go, what's a good site to go to even find a list of these regulated places?
So that's a great question. There is a national recovery hotline and center.
Okay.
It has a list.
Okay.
Now how good that list is and how much those top line and top quality treatment centers versus ones that literally just take the patient in, file the health insurance paperwork, get the money, give these patients pills, sometimes more addictive than the pills that they're actually already on or the drug of choice, and send them out without any aftercare plans or anything like that.
That's horrifying.
It is.
It's horrifying.
Yes.
On many levels. So
I would say that there are probably just as many, if not more, of those bad places as there are those good places.
Wow.
And that's because of money. It costs a lot more to run a quality program, and your profit level is going to be lower.
Yeah.
And so you have to have the right people who want to do this and who want to care.
Yeah. And they have to go through, and like you said, it's going to cost a little bit more because they're following the regulations.
Yes.
And getting those qualified people mm-hmm. with certifications, education, backgrounds, and making sure we're doing this safely. And they have that person in their best interest. Is there a place to report these people?
Each state has their own agency. So there's not a federal overarching guidelines. There's not a federal regulation.
So you can't really report it because we're not regulating it.
Right. And we do have, so what is going on at the federal level is we're making some progress.
Okay.
Now, I think we passed the very first treatment or substance abuse act in 40 years in 2016. So it was the first bill in 40 years to address this issue.
Well, that's a start. We have to start somewhere.
It is. But it didn't create a regulatory agency. It didn't create a regulatory framework. It didn't mandate that states have to have certain regulatory bodies or anything like that in effect, which I think we need. Instead, it created plans and goals and a grant system to get more funding to treatment centers. Now, but that means that we have to make sure that the federal government who's giving out those grants then is making sure they're going to those quality ones instead of the predatory ones.
Right. So they have to come up with a standard
of
requirements to when they're applying for mm-hmm. money.
And some of that money does go to some very good things. It mandated that there's a lot bigger budget in the federal budget for naloxone into first responders. So it makes it so most every law enforcement agency and EMS company couldn't have some of that, can carry mm-hmm. that. So that's a great thing because we know that will save lives.
It's proven.
It's proven, yeah. It saves lives and it's a great thing to do. And with that also comes training on how to use it.
Right.
And so that's good. There's steps that we're doing.
Right.
It's just a matter of we're not having enough discussion in this country on mental health and addiction.
No.
And we're not doing enough.
We have a lot of work to do. Like even in our community, you know, we just haven't had a dot. When did our detox close? And we used to have a detox in Glenwood.
In Glenwood. It closed well before 2012.
Yeah, so it's been a long time coming for a detox.
The only detox in the valley is in Aspen.
Yes.
And county jail.
Right. And which is probably, or the ER in the hospital.
Yeah, but you can't spend 6 days at the ER.
No.
No.
Generally, you're getting sent out of the ER.
Yeah, and for most of these people who need detox, we're talking multiple days to go through these things. Even from alcohol, You know, I know people that had hallucinations to the point of they thought they were in different places.
Yeah.
And attempted, didn't know that they were committing or taking action that would look like suicide to the outside of observers.
Right.
Yeah. So
it does. It needs to, it's in a specialty and it's very intense.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably why I don't have the statistics on like who's getting arrested in the jails, and you probably know a lot more being a criminal justice lawyer, but I feel like it's probably a lot more than people realize.
Yes, and especially in rural areas like CD3 in Garfield County where we're in, the jail has a large portion of people who have some form of addiction in their life. Maybe they're not full blown. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and maybe they can still get to have some time and they haven't reached that point of massive amount of intervention.
Right.
But yeah, it's definitely an issue that goes hand in hand with law enforcement and criminal defense.
Yes. And mental illness gets twisted up in there.
Yes. 80% of all addicts have a form of mental health problem, from anxiety and depression to full-blown psychosis and those things.
Right.
And one of the ways that people have learned to medicate that is through self-medication. And yeah.
So. Because of the limited resources, people can come to the doctor's office. They can go to the ER. It's mm-hmm. a temporary patch.
It is.
On a bigger problem. And know that there are a lot more resources out there. My goal with my foundation, which is the Kangel Connection organization, is to get the person to the resource. So I'm diving into that, and I'd like to have a collective amount of resources so a person can go to that website and be like, let me get a hold of her, or if I can't find it, let me get a hold of her, and then I'll work together with this community to try to get people to the right resources. You're not alone.
No.
Don't be in shame, and don't give up.
No, and that's a great foundation in progress with that foundation, because as I said, there's a national list you can go to,
mm-hmm.
but that's a national list, and okay. you know, then you have to figure out, how do I contact these people, what do I do, when do I go, what do I bring, even
yeah.
also when you're going into treatment for 30 days, life continues on around you. Who's paying your bills?
Right.
Who's, you know,
do you have animals, do you have
right.
pets that need care
yeah.
for? I mean, it goes on, right?
Yes. You know,
if you're taking care of your elderly parent, who's going to step in and do that?
Right.
There's a lot of resources that will need to be collected so
yeah.
we can make sure people feel good about going and getting help for themselves, so we can make sure, like yep. you said, that's a very valid and important point.
I'm a big advocate with all of my clients. If they want to get treatment, okay, but and I want you to go in tomorrow, but we need to get these ducks in a row first. So that way, when you come out, you are set up for success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is Colin. In case you're just tuning in, this is Pay It Forward. I have Colin Wilhelm on the air with me now, talking about first and foremost treatment, addiction,
yes.
And what our not just our state, our government, things that are there's a lot of work to be done.
And what I want to do when I get to Congress is implement these regulations and work to make sure that those quality treatment centers, inpatient, outpatient, detox centers, and recovery care post, all of that is regulated and good and available for people to have at a reasonable price, if not some form of public interaction with that.
Right, some assistance
yes.
in public. MindSprings, are they part of this
yes.
evolution of...
Yeah.
What we need to do and changes as well.
Yes, MindSprings is one of the biggest forces for addiction and mental health treatment on the Western Slope, and they are underpaid, underfunded, and overworked.
Yeah.
And they can't hire enough people. And it's hard to... This is also a very hard place, I would think, to work in, very hard field to work in, and with a high burnout level.
Yeah. And a high cost of living in this area.
Yes.
So, is there some newer programs coming up at our colleges for mental
yes.
wellness and addiction and counseling and things
yep.
like that?
And even at the lower levels. And one thing that I want to do is expand this. So currently some states and some counties, Colorado being one of them, Garfield County has one, Eagle County, other counties throughout the district have underfunded programs that put clinicians in schools from elementary school to middle school to high school, all the way up to the college level. The Colorado state budget for that is $1.6 million for the entire state.
So yeah.
That's why, yeah. Underfunded massively. I want to create that as a national program and get it into every school around the country. And I think that's important because, as I talked about, self-medication, a way to deal with mental health, is one of the main reasons that people start using drugs or continue to use them after their experimental phase is over.
Right. Younger is more likely going to start with oh, come on, dude,
yeah,
it's fine.
Yep.
You know, a little peer pressure. I want to be part of the cool group and I want to be accepted. Because
yeah,
I think a lot of younger people have a low self-confidence and they want to be part of something. So I can understand that.
Or you go to college and you go to a keg party. That's what you do.
That's what you do. It's yeah, not. And then if you're not doing that, people are like, what's wrong with him? He's not doing that.
Yeah.
So it's about being part of something and
mm-hmm,
it's just the norm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it could start there.
Yeah.
It could also be somebody's abused at home and they're
yes,
self-medicating. I mean, it could be so many layers of why, but I think we're the only way we're ever going to really, truly, this is just my opinion. This is not a statistic or a fact. This is my personal opinion of the only way to win a quote unquote war on drugs is by not doing them and really just trying to find some kind of thrill or dopamine in our brain by doing things that make us feel good.
You know, that's a better start than putting people in jail for using.
Mm-hmm.
Because you put them in jail for using and don't get them treatment and they will come out and now they have no money, they have no job prospects, they don't have no place to live, and they're massively depressed from all of that stuff. So they're going to do something that
right,
will give them a dopamine rush or make them forget about their problems.
Right.
And so it's a vicious cycle that way. But if we treat them with compassion and quality programs and relapse prevention, and all of this stuff, we could talk for hours and hours
yeah,
and hours. We have a better chance of making them a productive member of society, which then increases their economic impact to a society, makes them have the ability to be productive family members and just all around great people, and actually propels our society forward.
It does.
Yes.
And these are people. These people are, they are all kinds of things to many people. And we need to start having the kindness and compassion. I know we have it. I think we're lucky on the Western Slope over here in our little bubble. I call it a bubble because I feel like we're pretty special over here. But we'd like to bring awareness out of our bubble.
Yeah, there's a great set of resources in the Roaring Fork Valley, in the Eagle Valley, in Steamboat, Rout County, that area, but some areas of Western Colorado are very deficient on it. And
yeah,
and that's just something that we need as a society to work on. Hopefully by removing the stigma from addiction and mental health, we can start to improve those areas. And it takes everybody to remove that stigma because we need to recognize that at a certain point, we need help to help these people. It's a disease.
It's a disease. And like you said, one out of three people are touched
yes,
by addiction. We want to plant a seed to all of you out there. You can act, you can think globally, but you can act locally by just getting involved
yep,
and creating. You can create, use your creativity, tap into your resources from as young or as old, and you can get out there and be involved.
And there's so many organizations that will direct you to places where you can volunteer in these types of communities as well. That is a great resource. You can always call different Salvation Army, Catholic Charities,
yep,
those types of places will get you in touch with people who want your help that you're willing to give.
Yep. Yeah. So, Colin, because we're super excited that you are running, is there like a website that we could that if you're listening and you want to tune in and you want to support
yes,
what Colin is talking about, where can we go and donate and find more information?
Yep. So I'm on Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter handle is ColinWilhelm22. But the best place to find all of that is my website, wilhelmforcolorado.com. And it's got links to donate all throughout the page. There's a video that I made about more into my story. You can watch that. You can definitely donate there. And what I would love to do, I know about your foundation,
mm-hmm.
and it means a lot to me.
Thank you.
And I want to make a pledge, if people are willing to go to my website and donate to my campaign, whatever the amount they're going to give, if they put in the memo line or the subject line, Kane's name, your foundation name, your name, or Katie and Kay, I will match that contribution to your foundation up to $5,000 over the next couple of months.
I love that. Colin, that's an honor. And
That will be from my personal money that I'll match it from, not from the campaign money. So
that is an honor. And I definitely feel like you have a lot of great, not just experience and knowledge, but I think you have a lot of great momentum building. So I feel very strongly about change coming with, if we can get you into this office, I feel very strongly about some great changes for our community and our people that are struggling in this time.
Thank you. That means a lot to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I can reach, as you know, if we can reach a couple individuals that are struggling, right there is a victory in and of itself.
It is one person. Yes. So it's not we need to, we must.
We must.
We must make this change, and we must make these small steps will lead to a greater staircase, which will get us to the direction we need to go. So I'm super honored you took the time out of your Sunday evening.
Well, I'm more honored than you know to be here.
And Kangel, the Kangel Connection, you can go to the website. It's a very long one. It's Kane, C-A-I-N-E. A lot of people spell it K, but C-A-I-A-N-I-E .kangelconnection.org is my website. It's definitely needing a lot more work, you guys, so be patient with me. But I'm going to work with Colin. I think we're going to join forces, and we're going to build this community and these resources so we can provide support and help to any of you out there struggling.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Well, I would say this was a great Pay It Forward evening. We're going to go into some music here. Colin, any last messages or anything that you got coming up on your agenda?
We have a bunch of different events coming up all this summer. If you go to my website, it shows all the events on there on the events page. You can click on those links and find out more details and even let us know if you want to attend any of them. And I try to answer almost every email as much as possible that comes through there personally. So as of right now, that's still kind of manageable. So shoot me an email.
Shoot him an email. And then www.wilhelm4colorado.com. And that's where you can go and find all kinds of stuff to be involved in.
Yes.
And again, you can donate, you can be involved, you can email him and see what's coming up.
Yep. And thank you. And if anybody out there does need help, you can call my campaign at 970-930-1209 as well. And we'll always be there to talk to people who need help when they need it.
Oh, namaste. This has been an amazing evening. I'm looking forward to what's coming up. And if you guys have any questions, you can also reach out to Katie and Kay, and they can get you our information from here as well. And then we'll have something up on the Katie and Kay website as well. So we want to support Colin, and we want to support the community. So thank you for tuning in and spending some time with Colin and I.